You're listening to the Wobcast with the one and only, the legendary, the insurmountable Wobby.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another playoff edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshall, inside TCO Studios at Winter Park. By my side, as usual, co-host and producer, Chris Corso. What's up, dude?
What's up? This is a good week.
Yeah, man. Have you slept yet?
Ever since Sunday, it's been an absolute whirlwind. Ever since that play.
Yeah.
And it's just been, let's go to work every day and be excited to be here. So it's
The Minneapolis miracle, the gift that keeps on giving everyone. Chris, you keep a pulse of our digital content and the traffic and the clicks and all that. I mean,
I just have to say, anything that we put up that has to do with this play is getting eaten up by every single
I can't get enough of it.
It's crazy. We've done we did a social reaction right away. We did a long form written article. We did the podcast with PA. We did a fan video that our Grant Ridpath put together that has been shared on Deadspin, NFL.com, everywhere. God. I can't even, just number of things.
It's the emotional attachment that people have to it, man. That's what it is.
And it's great.
Like, if that happened in, like, week seven, you know, of the season, so you could go, get to 4-3, it wouldn't do it, man. It's the playoffs. It's crunch time. It's the agony of defeat that we felt in the playoffs. It's putting music to it. It's everything, man. It's emotional for everyone.
It's been great, and I have to say, I'm proud to work with these guys because we have so many talented people here, and
we do.
We did every type of content you can even imagine. Over this play has been done here in the last couple days, so it's been great.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, I tell you, this is our second Wobcast of the week, as you pointed out, Chris. We did one with Voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, earlier in the week as he tried to put the Minneapolis Miracle in perspective for us. But now we have to put the Minneapolis Miracle behind us and put the focus on the Philadelphia Eagles and the NFC Championship game. So today, we have a full show. We will debate who should be the NFL's coach of the year since the head coaches of the Eagles and the Vikings are in that discussion. We have Know Your Enemy with Chris over-unders. And we'll take a look way back to John Gruden's QB camp with Case Keenum, thanks to our friends at ESPN. But first, some news and notes. Chrissy, the Pro Football Writers Awards.
So we've been keeping a tab on these all week. The Pro Football Writers Association comes out with couple awards each day on each subject. They all vote. And there's a couple Vikings in there.
Mm-hmm.
First team all pros, according to them, are safety Harrison Smith and cornerback Xavier Rhodes. So those guys are just keep getting the accolades that they deserve for a spectacular season. And then one that really hit home for probably a lot of players on this team, you saw a bunch of congratulations being sent out, was rookie center Pat Elflein being honored on the all-rookie team. That's a huge award for him.
Yep.
And he's been kind of the anchor of this offense, and he deserves a lot more respect than he gets. So
for sure.
When that came out, you saw on Twitter, there were a bunch of notes from Kyle Rudolph and members of the offensive line that have been there for a while, giving them congratulations. So that was cool. And then on Thursday, Coach Shurmur was the offensive coordinator of the Vikings, was a named assistant coach of the year. And Coach Zimmer had some good things to say about Shurmur in his press conference today. So those were some good notes for the Vikings.
Yep, for sure. A note I have here, Chris, still some head coaching openings in the NFL. Of course, Pat Shurmur's name is swirling around with the Giants opening and the Arizona opening. So aside from the Giants and Arizona's openings, you also have Detroit, Indianapolis, and now Tennessee. The Tennessee Titans, who made the playoffs, parted ways, I guess, a mutual parting of ways with Mike Mularkey. So there's an opening there in Tennessee. Interesting that the Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels and the defensive coordinator Matt Patricia, both candidates for these jobs. The Titans are run by John Robinson. He's their general manager, who came from the Patriots.
Good point.
The Lions are run by Bob Quinn, who also came from the Patriots.
That's
so
right.
Wouldn't be surprising if those two teams have McDaniels and or Matt Patricia on their radars. So we'll see what happens. Gene Steratore, he was the referee for the Minneapolis Miracle and will be the referee at US Bank Stadium for Super Bowl 52. An honor for Gene and something I know that he cherishes. The reason I know that is because Peter King shared a story with us when we were talking with him in an interview that was posted on Vikings.com earlier in the week as we kind of went off on a tangent on Gene Steratore. He said that he did a story on what it's like, you know, the day, a week in the life of a referee, and they followed Gene Steratore and his crew around for a week a year or two ago, and that, you know, Gene made it clear that his goal, number one goal, personally and professionally, was to referee a Super Bowl.
Wow.
And he's going to be refereeing Super Bowl 52. He's in his 15th season right now as an NFL game official, entered in 2003 as a field judge. He was promoted to a referee back in 2006, officiated 11 playoff games, including two conference title games. He was the alternate for a Super Bowl 42 between the Saints and the Colts. And he will be the head referee for Super Bowl 52 in Minnesota. So congratulations to Gene Steratore. And finally, before we get on with the rest of the show, a couple of offensive coordinators now on the market for the Jets, John Morton, and for the Steelers, Todd Haley. This caught my eye, Chris, because you're a New York guy. And the Jets got rid of their offensive coordinator, so they're looking for one. And then I got to thinking, who else is out there for possible OCs? Jim Caldwell, Daryl Bevel, Todd Downing are also all out there. And I know that Eagles quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo is in a headline every now and then as a hot coaching candidate. So not only head coaching vacancies, but also some offensive coordinator vacancies. And that's sort of, you know, at this time of year, something that we think a lot about normally, but we don't really right now because we're in the playoffs.
Absolutely, we're in the playoffs, but you definitely have to keep an eye on some of these offensive names if you're a Vikings fan, because we know that Pat Shurmur is one of the biggest offensive coaching candidates, head coaching candidates for a lot of these teams. So you have to keep an eye if you're a Vikings fan on some of these big names. Obviously, you can throw Mike Mularkey into that crew well, because he's a Minnesota guy, right?
Yeah, good one. Yeah, he was a Viking. Yep,
he was a Viking. So keep an eye on him as well.
Yep.
And that might be a spot that we have to fill next year, as we've talked about on some previous shows. But let's have a debate.
Yeah. I like this.
This is good. So NFL Network's Steve Wyche, Kim Jones, Judy Batista, and Mike Silver discussed this on the NFL Network earlier this week. That video is on Vikings.com as well. But they discussed, kind of go into it, Wobby, if you can.
Yeah, well, you know, they started talking. This is like a 5 or 6 minute segment. We're going to cut about 3 minutes of it for you to listen to. The first part is they're talking about Doug Peterson and the job he did last year, how much better he got this year. Mike Silver goes on to talk about some things that he's uncovered, sort of studying Doug Peterson and talking to people about Doug Peterson. But the second half of the discussion then focuses on the Vikings and Mike Zimmer and the job he has done. And what I really like about it is they go beyond just the head coaches and talk about some of the other staff members for the Vikings and for the Eagles who have really stepped up. So a really interesting discussion among these NFL Network folks about who is the NFL Coach of the Year. They preface it by saying it could be Sean McVay's award, but what about Doug Peterson and Mike Zimmer? And here's what they had to say about our guy, Coach Zimmer.
And I remember walking up the tunnel with Doug Peterson saying that when Nick Foles came in, he made a point of staying aggressive because he wanted to show his team we're going to stay aggressive with Nick Foles. Now, they scored 15 points in this last game.
Right.
It's not the same. I sat down with Fletcher last week. We might disagree on this. They are a great team, but one player does make a difference.
Well, Carson Wentz is a special player, but let's flip this. Okay, you talked about how Doug Peterson's not getting votes for Coach of the Year. I think Mike Zimmer should be the Coach of the Year. It's probably going to go to Sean McVay, maybe Doug Marrone. But what Mike Zimmer has done, okay, you had the quarterback change, you had the running back issues, but Mike, we talked about it. This guy has had 8 eye surgeries. Yeah. A lot of folks. Look, I was there this summer. They were worried that he was not going to be able to coach this season and maybe ever again.
And think about it. 2 years ago, they lost a home playoff game to the Seahawks when Blair Walsh missed it, back when he was blowing kicks for the Vikings, missed a 27-yard field goal against the Seahawks. I remember being at the owners' meetings with Zim, and I've known him for a long time, and he's one of my favorites. And Rhett Ellison's father, Ricky, who played for the 49ers, had come out after Rhett signed with the Giants and said there was a, quote, toxic leadership in the Vikings locker room, and that's why people were leaving. Clearly directed at Zimmer. And He was a little unhappy, and he felt
him.
Yeah, he said, I tried to call him, and so, you know, listen, he's been through a lot, the eye surgeries, Teddy Bridgewater's horrible injury, Sam Bradford going down this year, and you're right, he's just done a fantastic job.
I think managing that, all of the quarterback, you know, ups and downs and injuries is remarkable. I mean, they have not lost steam at any point. Things that, again, could have caused the bottom to drop out of the entire season.
Dalvin Cook, too.
Well, right. Let's quickly then take it away from the coaches. Howie Roseman, Rick Spielman. Depth at quarterback. These were the first two teams pretty much in the NFL to go get backup quarterbacks with some experience, and they've got people in place. Kim, what about the job those two general managers have done to get talent to provide depth and also fit the scheme to these coaches?
Well, and how about the job Pat Shurmur has done with Case Keenum? I mean, they're doing this with Case Keenum as their primary quarterback. Case Keenum, you know, say what you want about the Saints' defense, the Saints' safety, everything else. Case Keenum made a play with some help from Stephon Diggs, that we are going to remember forever.
I said on this network, Case proved me wrong when I compared him to Drew Brees. He's not Drew Brees, but Case Keenum, you proved me wrong. You are a monster. Sorry to cut you off.
Go back to what you're saying about Pat Shurmur.
Well, and Pat Shurmur has done more with less, if you will. And I think that's one of the reasons he's so attracted to the New York Giants is he lost pieces, whether it was at quarterback, running back, along the offensive line, and still was able to not only make it work, but make it work in that fashion on Sunday. I think that would get anyone's attention, especially a Giants team that is looking for a leader who can lead when things aren't perfect.
So I loved hearing Rick Spielman and Pat Shurmur get some love from those guys at the end of that segment. And, you know, just because I think Rick did a great job with Riley Reiff, Mike Remmers, Case Keenum, Latavius Murray. Like, those signings in free agency were huge. Drafting Pat Elflein, huge.
Huge.
And this is the best defense in the NFL, built primarily through the draft. Yes, you got Linval Joseph in free agency, and he is very key to what happens on defense. But Barr, Kendricks in the draft with Rick. Rick drafted Everson. Rick drafted Daniil. Rick drafted Xavier and Harrison and Trey Wayne. So, like, great job by Rick and his scouts of hitting on defensive players. And then, of course, Shurmur, the job he's done with Case Keenum and losing Dalvin Cook and finding a way to mix in Murray and McKinnon and Adam Thielen's 1,000-yard receiver. And, you know, I think Pat Shurmur's done a great job as well. So nice to see those guys get some love from the NFL Network crew.
And that was something as well that Kyle Rudolph hit on this week. He was asked about the offense, kind of a more national question with some of the new reporters here this week. And he just said, look at our offense. I mean, who are you going to stop? You're going to stop Diggs. You're going to stop Thielen. You're going to stop me. What about Jarius Wright? Mm-hmm. What about Laquan Treadwell, Michael Floyd? And then you go into the running backs and you have three or four of those guys as well. So, yeah, I agree with that. There's a lot of weapons on this team. No real standout, but I mean, I guess you could say Adam Thielen because he had a spectacular year, but I think it's a real team effort there with a bunch of playmakers looking at those guys. But now we're going to look at something way back there, and this was on ESPN this week. The YouTube video flew all over the internet this week. John Gruden, as we talked about last week, he's now the head coach of the Oakland Raiders.
Yep.
He ran this QB camp
every year for
ESPN with all of the top quarterbacks in the combine and in the draft before they get drafted to the NFL. He sat down with Mr. Case Keenum.
Loved it.
And this is when Case Keenum was the NCAA's all-time leading passer, as he still is. He has so many records from the University of Houston, but he was not looked at as one of the top quarterbacks in
this
class.
He was not. Yeah, so, and largely because of his size, if I remember correctly, and maybe level of competition as well.
So our friends at ESPN have given us this video to post on Vikings.com. There's actually a story on it as well on the website. But we're going to play a little clip for you here and then kind of talk about some of the main highlights coming out after you guys take a listen. So here you go.
Case Keenum.
I knew he had a lot of production, and that's an understatement.
Touchdown, Case Keenum.
He's reckless when he plays.
This is insane right here. Explain yourself.
I'm trying to get out of bounds there.
He can stand right in there in the face of pressure.
Not many guys can stare down the gun barrel like this, man.
He's got charisma. He's fun to be around.
What is that you're doing right there? Like a Yosemite Sam?
Having too much fun.
You know what I love about you, Keenum? You got some serious guts, man. Some of these throws you've made from awkward body positions, guys beating right down on you. So these are some of my favorite plays that make me say there is no doubt you're going to be just fine. Not many guys can stare down the gun barrel like this, man, and throw a strike. Bro, that's a great throw. Yeah, I mean, they're coming at you with a stunt dog right up the middle. A lot of people would have bailed on this. A lot of people would have crumbled. I know what I'd have done. I'd have said, hey, punt team. I wouldn't have stood in there, man. That's big time, you hear me? That's big time throw. Who is this we're playing?
Mississippi State.
Okay. We don't like free blitzers. You know, we're in a scat protection. I know we're turning a lot of this over to the offensive line when we're using motion. But you knew you had a free blitzer right here. You scramble, you buy just enough time. And, you know, your ability to make some of these throws from awkward body angles, that's unbelievable throw. I don't know how you do this. What did the coach say to you after this play?
I don't remember, but I think I got a little lucky that the guy fell down. Guy made a good route and got a little lucky. Probably shouldn't throw across the body like that, but somehow we made it work.
My point is, this isn't inflated production. This is NFL Pro Bowl production right here. This is some great stuff. This one right here, I don't know who's supposed to block this kid. That's your problem. You know, you better make a note. These A gaps, they should never be stressed, ever.
Right.
Somebody's got to make a gap call come down. At number 60, got to reject that A-gap blitzer. Now to bring the tackle down into the B-gap. But if we make a mistake, we're on the fringe, we don't get a firm pickup. Bro, that's big time right there. You like this?
I do. That was I knew what coverage I got, and I knew I had to get it out quick. Had man-to-man, checked a corner route from that inside receiver, and I knew I was going there the whole time.
Third and goal. Keenum fires. End zone. Edwards, touchdown.
Now the back shoulder fade, was this your favorite throw of your career right here? Because you got excited after you hit this one.
We've been working on it a bunch, and to finally hit it was nice. It felt really good. Felt good come out of my hands. He had made a great adjustment, and it was one of my favorite.
So, Wobby.
Yes.
What did you take? I mean, there's so much information in here, and we just played a little clip. Like I said, you could see the full clip on Vikings.com, but what really did you take that John Gruden had to say way back when about Case Keenum before he got his chance?
Well, I think the thing that stands out to me is, you know, those Gruden QB camps, they're put on ESPN and they're put on TV for us to watch and be entertained by, you know, but I do think that even if you took the cameras out of there, I think Gruden would still have done that with those guys. And I think those guys who go in there with him still could learn a lot from John, from Coach Gruden. And, you know, Gruden was like, you know, I think everyone just heard, you know, the line where Gruden basically guaranteed Case that he would get a chance, that somewhere down the line, you're going to get your chance and you just got to be ready for it. But the thing he said right before that was, you know, take this note, write this down right now. Someone's going to give you a chance, you know, and I think that's really kind of a key piece of advice, is to write this down, Case, on this sheet of paper. So it is etched in your memory. You are going to get a chance. And so when you write that down and think about it, I think you can't, if you're truly a competitor and truly someone who believes in yourself, you should think about that every single day. And I think Case Keenum probably did, you know, and he struggled, you know, trying to make it work in Houston and trying to make it work in St. Louis and trying to make it work for the LA Rams. And it just didn't. And then he signed with the Vikings, even though we had Bradford and Teddy, and he did it anyway. And he worked hard and he prepared and practiced like he was the starter. Like, you'd go out to mini camp, you'd go out to training camp and watch Case Keenum, and he's, you know, clapping in the huddle and trying to pump guys up. And it's like, you know, dude, this is practice, but he's treating it like it's a game. And so when I think back to that and look back at what Gruden said to Case, and then I watch how Case operates and conducts himself, I'm not surprised either that Case has done what he's done. That's kind of what stood out to me.
And it's funny because Stephon Diggs took the podium yesterday with a big crowd for his press conference, and they said, are you surprised with what Keenum's done? And he said, no.
Right.
He said, I've seen it every day since OTA, since training camp. He said, the funny thing is that you guys are all surprised, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting to hear. Some other notes. I really liked him being compared to Tony Romo.
Yeah.
That was like, when I saw that Tony Romo, as we all know, played at the University of, was it Northern Illinois?
He played at Eastern Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Same schools like Sean Payton and Mike Shanahan.
You see some of that tape there, and you're just like, that's Tony Romo. And obviously not the most athletic quarterback, a Texas guy as he went to the Dallas Cowboys there. But, yeah, I like that comparison a lot. Yep. And definitely that stood out to me as well. Another thing that stood out was John Gruden said to Case, he said, prepare with a wet ball. Prepare with these bad. You're a guy from Texas. You know the heat. You know the dry. But you need to know that when you're in the NFL, you can play in any stadium, whether it's snowing or raining. Practice with a wet ball. And I heard that, and I was like, wow, that's something that you don't hear every day from a head coach or anything like that. So,
and can't you just see Gruden like being the coach and bringing a bucket of water out to practice?
Of course.
I can totally see that.
I love that. Yeah. That was great. And then the last thing is obviously the chance, like you mentioned. John Gruden is – I actually heard his reaction to this video this past week, and he said – I was given a chance. I was a backup quarterback at Dayton, John Gruden was back in the day, and Mike Holmgren gave him a chance with the Green Bay Packers, and obviously he's taken it and run with it, and he ended up being a Super Bowl winning head coach with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So everyone, once you get that chance, you got to be ready to go, and that's what it seems like both of these guys have done.
Dude,
so far,
I love John Gruden.
How could you not love him?
If you don't love John Gruden, you don't love football.
Yeah.
Period.
Agreed. They're synonymous.
Absolutely. 100%.
All right, let's move on to this week's opponent. Huge game coming up here. I know you're excited.
So are you.
I'm excited. We're all excited.
We're going to get on that team plane on Saturday, and I ain't going to sleep Saturday night.
I can't wait. It's actually my birthday tomorrow.
Oh.
And this is like could you get a better birthday present?
No. Well, maybe, but...
Maybe.
No.
Maybe, but no.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I highlighted some of these big lines here, big storylines looking at the game, and number one for me, and this is, Case Keenum takes the podium yesterday, Wednesday, and says, guys, if you, shout out to any of you guys out there, you experts.
who predicted
a Keenum Foles and NFC Championship, and he made a little joke, and that's Keenum.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great that he said that.
Yeah.
And that's my number one storyline is Keenum and Foles.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and the whole thing where they were teammates and they were both Jeff Fisher quarterbacks and, the Bradford tie where, Teddy gets hurt, so the Vikings give the Eagles a first-round pick, and the Vikings get Bradford, and the Eagles take a defensive end who they're going to play this weekend, with the draft pick we gave them, and we have Bradford, and Bradford gets hurt, and Keenum saves the day, and because they lost Bradford, they needed a backup, so they got Nick Foles. Like, it's just amazing. The tentacles, the Vikings and Eagles tentacles that are interwoven, and now here they are in the title game. It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's tentacles is a good word, actually.
It is everywhere. There's just so many of them.
Agreed.
I mean, our season died in Philadelphia last year, basically.
Yep.
Like, we
that
came
was
apart.
The start.
Yeah,
that,
we came
that,
apart there.
Yeah. We went there undefeated,
yeah.
If I'm correct. And I'll never forget that game. Andrew Sandejo had a huge interception on Carson Wentz and almost took it to the house, but was tackled right before the goal line. And the Vikings ended up not scoring a point on that drive because it was like some sort of holding penalty, a sack, whatever it was.
Yep.
And that was just like the momentum changer for not only the game, but the entire season. So obviously injuries had a lot to do with that as well. But I'm sensing a turn of the tide when we go to Philadelphia this time. Looking at the numbers from Nick Foles, he had a pretty good game in the second half, especially against the Atlanta Falcons when the Eagles won 15-10. Foles completed 23 of 30 passes for 246 yards, no touchdowns, and no interceptions. So there were a lot of field goals in this game. So he's, how would you describe Foles to the average fan who hasn't seen him play as of late?
And the other thing is, Doug Peterson was a career backup, Frank Reich was a career backup, and Nick Foles has been a backup for a long time. So I think they know how to construct a plan for a backup quarterback. So I don't think Nick Foles is going to like melt down and give this game away. He might have zero touchdowns and might struggle to move the ball against the Vikings, but I do not anticipate a two interception, two fumble game from Nick Foles.
I agree. And one big thing that stood out was how he performed in the second half. He moved the ball against that tough Atlanta defense. So that's something I will definitely keep an eye on if he starts out slow. The next we're looking at is the Eagles front seven. This team is the number one team in the NFL in stopping the run. So we need to get the running game going. Zimmer said, the first thing he said was, the team that runs the ball this week will win the game.
I heard him say that. Well, it's the number one rushing defense and the number two rushing defense in the NFL regular season, Vikings and Eagles, Vikings 2, Eagles 1. So it is going to be tough sledding running the ball for both teams. And obviously, you know, every team wants to go into every game and establish the run and be balanced on offense. But, you know, the Eagles really would like to do that. They have two physical runners in LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi. And they do have kind of a scat back in Corey Clement who can be dangerous out of the backfield. But you really want to limit Blount and Ajayi, because if those guys are running at 4 or 5 yards a clip, that's going to make life so much easier for Nick Foles. And we don't want to make life easy for Foles. We want to make life tough for him.
That's right.
You know, and also, Chris, I think, you know, that the Vikings have the advantage at cornerback slash wide receiver. You know, Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes and Harrison Smith and the secondary, I think, has the advantage over Torrey Smith and Nelson Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey. No disrespect to those guys, but so we want to make the Eagles have to go to where they are at a disadvantage. We want to make them have to throw the ball outside.
That's right.
So that's why it's important to be good against the run.
Looking at our looking at this team, I mean, Derek Barnett, as you mentioned before, he's the draft pick that when the Eagles traded Sam Bradford to us, they took Derek Barnett out of Tennessee. He had 5 sacks this season. Chris Long, another he was a member of the New England Patriots team that won the Super Bowl last year, 5 sacks as well. Brandon Graham led Philadelphia with 9.5 sacks this season. And Fletcher Cox, in the middle of this defense, an all-pro, a Pro Bowler, everything you can imagine when it comes to stopping the run, this guy can do it. So, I mean, there it just goes on and on when it looking at some of these guys in the middle. And then, obviously, when you're looking at the secondary, you're looking at Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah.
I mean, he is... Coach Zimmer went on you don't hear him say good things about many opponents. He always respects every opponent we play, but he went on to say he's active in the secondary.
Yeah. He's everywhere.
He can make a tackle. He can, he's a ball hog. He can do just about everything in the secondary.
You know who that sounds like?
Harrison Smith.
Yeah, sounds like Harrison Smith, man. I mean, we've always loved that Harrison Smith's on our team. Well, we're playing against a guy like Harrison Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're going to feel that pain. Yeah, he's awesome.
We talked about the running backs already. That was my third clip here. Like we said, there's just so many places they can go with the ball when it comes to LeGarrette Blount, Ajayi, Corey Clement. We got to stop these guys. You just have to stop the run in this game. And the Atlanta Falcons did a pretty good job of it last week. So
they did. And you know, what I like about this, Chrissy, is – When you say those names and say we got to stop those names, what I think of is linebackers. Oh man, well you better have good linebackers. Well, I mean we got Byron Kendricks, so I feel good about that.
Yep.
You know, and I don't think that we are overmatching them at all. I'm just saying I like our chances in the matchup.
I agree. And then one thing I do not have listed on here, is the tight end on this team is
Zach Ertz
their best target.
Yeah, for sure.
We have shut down Alshon Jeffrey pretty much when he was a Chicago Bear. Xavier Rhodes always did a pretty good job on him.
Yeah.
Zach Ertz is going to require Anthony Barr. He's going to require some other players to pick him up. It's not always going to be a corner on this guy because he's a big target. So he's one to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, for a quarterback, tight end is a nice little nookie blankie anyway.
Yep.
And throw in the fact that it's Zach Ertz, who's probably one of the 6 or 7 best tight ends in the NFL, maybe one of the best 5. You know, he's probably going to be targeted quite a bit.
Let's move on to your mailbag.
All right.
All right. This one's from a New Yorker, George Bartlett from Rochester, New York. He asks, why did Pat Shurmur continue with the no-huddle offense on the drive for their last field goal? Drew Brees and 1:34 left on the clock is an eternity. They had the opportunity to run the clock out, and with that last ditch attempt for a field goal. So yeah. Kind of explain this to George.
Yeah, I don't see it the same way as George, you know, because the Vikings were on the 40-yard line. So they weren't in field goal range when they were throwing passes. They were trying to get into field goal range. I get George's point if the ball's on the 25 or the 30
Agreed.
With a minute 40. Then you can run three times. But if you, from the 40-yard line, run it three times to run the clock out, that doesn't do you any good if you don't get into field goal range. And you're not in field goal range at the 40. So I think the Vikings did that the right way. I think the Saints could have done a better job of running the clock down when they kicked their field goal.
Agreed.
And not having, you know, they could have not left us 25 seconds. You know, they ran an out route to Ted Ginn where he got out of bounds. I don't think they did that very well. And I think they wish they had the play call back on third and one when they lost 1 yard with a rushing attempt. So, but I think the Vikings handled the clock the right way in the lead up to that Kai Forbath field goal.
And that Kai Forbath field goal was 53 yards. So, yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. So we weren't even in field goal range when we were in field goal
exactly,
range.
Exactly, right.
So, yeah, I agree. On to the next one. Rick Roeder from Iowa.
Yeah.
The last play, if Diggs had stepped out of bounds after a legal catch, would there still have been time on the clock for a field goal attempt?
Yes, I think
That's
so.
That's the first one, yeah.
Yeah, I went back and looked at it, and there were a few ticks left on the clock.
Yeah, I agree. There was time. That was my first reaction from the press box was, get out of bounds.
Yep.
Obviously, it ended up great. Number two, I see from the sideline camera of Diggs' touchdown posted on the Vikings app that the back judge threw a flag. Yep. I am presuming for Diggs removing and throwing his helmet.
Yes.
Do you know why that penalty was assessed?
Oh, yeah. No, it was not assessed.
Yeah.
Right, because that's the understanding I have is that penalty is assessed on the kickoff.
That's right.
And
15-yard penalty on the kickoff. Right?
Wasn't a kickoff.
No.
So here's the interesting thing then. What if that touchdown had tied the game? We don't get assessed that penalty on the extra point?
I would assume no, right?
Interesting. I wonder if they're going to look at that in the offseason.
Yeah, that is something that, I mean, the time ran out, so there's no time on the clock. There's no reason to kick the ball off because we had the lead. So that penalty can't get assessed.
Right.
Right?
That's what the rule seems to suggest.
Yeah.
So that might be changed in the offseason.
And number three from Rick. Rick's got a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Why in the world would there be a rule that they have a play out that they have to play out and try the extra point, such as after a game-winning touchdown with no time on the clock?
Yeah.
Let's bring it home, school.
Yeah. I think that's because, like, in the regular season, one of the tiebreakers for seeding or for playoff entry is points scored or point differential, one or the other. So, you know, that, you know, you would want to kick the extra point maybe.
Any point counts,
you know, But another thing they could potentially look at, you know, in the offseason is do we need to do these extra points?
And keep in mind, this was the first time that this has happened in an NFL postseason game.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
you know,
this
because
is uncharted territory.
If you score a touchdown, if let's say you're down by 5 points and you score a touchdown and now you're up by one and time has expired or there's, you know, whatever, 5 seconds left even.
Okay.
You got to be careful kicking the extra point because if it's blocked and returned,
that's 2 points.
Yep. You lose. You know, so that's why they play all these things out. But, you know, when stuff happens in the playoffs and there's so much exposure, sometimes it can cause a discussion and a change in the rules. It will be interesting to see if that happens with the extra point rule and with the penalty on the kickoff rule.
This last question from Jerry Provost. I love this beginning of this question because I can relate. Okay. Still can't sleep.
Yes.
Can't get over this, and I am enjoying every second of it. Absolutely love the insight and depth of the most recent Wobcast. Great job. In relation to the Wobcast, can you give us fans some insight into the production meetings that take place during the week leading up to the games? Skull.
Yeah, the production meetings, what happens is, so like let's say, you know, for last week's game, it's Troy Aikman and Joe Buck and Chris Myers and Aaron Andrews. So those four will be here at Winter Park on Friday. And they, you know, joining them will be the director and the producer of the broadcast and maybe one or two other technical support or stats people. They'll all come here to Winter Park. They'll be set up in a meeting room. And when practice is over, you know, they will have a request list for the PR staff, and the PR staff will do the best they can to bring in Mike Zimmer, the starting quarterback, and then two or three key players on offense and defense. And the crew, the broadcast crew, will ask those guys questions about, you know, how the season has gone. What do you expect during the game? What are some keys for you guys? What'd you work on in practice? You know, they just ask some questions. And because it's a private setting, and because there's just a assuming that there is a trust factor, you know, they'll be a little more forthright with the broadcast crew in those production meetings than they might be at a press conference, because they're assuming that that information is not going to get out. And if it does get out, it's going to get out in the game.
During the game, yeah.
Where it, you know, it can't be used against them. So a lot of relationships are built in those meetings, and you know, it's very good faith and positive, because you're not just going to have one production meeting in your life with Joe Buck. You're going to probably have two or three a season and more if you're a good team, because you're going to be you're going to have the number one crew quite a bit. So they're fun to be a part of and listen to if you get the opportunity to do so. And a lot of what you hear and see on a TV broadcast happens or starts in those production meetings.
That's right. And I appreciate Jerry giving some love to the Wobcast.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome.
We Thank
love
you,
that.
Jerry.
We love that, Jerry. Let's move on to another segment that gets a lot of love on the Wobcast, and that's the over-under.
All right, let's do it.
This creates a lot of debate on this show, so we'll start out with the first one. This was actually spoken about in the studio here at the Vikings Entertainment Network this week. The over-under for the game is 38.5 points for both teams combined. A lot of people are expecting a low-scoring game. This is obviously a low number. So, Wobby, over or under the combined 38.5? We've had our arguments about this already this week, so let's do it. Let's do it on the Wobcast.
I would go under. I would not guess more than 40 points or more in this game. I think points are going to be at a premium. I think every possession is going to matter. Every first down is going to matter. Every coaching decision is going to matter, and points will be at a premium. So I'm under here.
I went under as well.
Yeah.
I think the argument was with another member of the Vikings Entertainment Network here.
Hurus.
Yeah. I think it was Hurus, yep. Like I said, if you score 20 points in this game, I think you win the game.
Okay. We can do that.
And that's evident of the spread here of 38.5, because obviously if two teams score 20 points, then you're sitting on the over.
Right.
So I think if you score 20 points, you win the game, and I'm going with the under on this one.
Okay.
Number two, 70 yards for Alshon Jeffrey. This is something that we haven't touched on as much here with some of the storylines of the game. But
yeah, that's true.
It's a big part of the game.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Xavier against Alshon, or Xavier against Torrey, or Xavier shadowing Nelson Aguilar. That just has not been a big talker this week for whatever the reason.
Yep.
I think the advantage is to the Vikings secondary outside in this matchup with the receivers, you know, on the outside, and that's a lot of times where Jeffrey is. And even if they move Jeffrey inside, I could see Rhodes shadowing him there. So I'd go under on this. This kind of falls in line with the first one, the over-under. I just think it's going to be tough to move the ball here, so give me the under.
Agreed. I'm going under as well. Xavier's been nothing but spectacular. Obviously, Michael Thomas did have a little bit of success there in the second half. But
yeah, that's true.
I do see Xavier just saying, you know what, I let up my first touchdown in who knows how long against Michael Thomas last week. And I think he knows Alshon Jeffrey. They played in the same division together coming up as young players in this league. And I think he's going to play well against them.
Yep.
Number three. And this question has a lot to it.
Okay.
Because Coach Zimmer needs to stop the run this week.
Yep.
This is something that he's focusing on. So under or over 100 yards for the Philadelphia running backs combined. Keep in mind, they had 96 last week against Atlanta. So
wow. Is that all they had?
That's all they had. Atlanta did, like we said, a spectacular job stopping the run on the road in that game where Philadelphia only scored 15 points. And
I'm over.
You're over.
I mean, I think we're going to win this game, and I think our defense is going to play great. But like I said, we have the advantage on the outside against these receivers with our corners and safeties. So I think unless it's just Ertz all day in America, I think the running backs are about their best chance to move the ball down the field. They got three of them that they can mix up. They can run inside. They can try to run outside. They can get Clement in the screen game. I saw Ajayi had like a 30-yard gain on a screen pass against Atlanta. So I don't think it's going to be 100 yards rushing, but I think total yards rushing and receiving, I think they can get to 100, but I still don't think that'll be enough, and I don't think it'll be very much over 100.
I agree. I'm going to go over here as well with adding that when Coach Zimmer puts his mind to something on defense, it usually gets
it
done.
Yeah.
So I will say over because obviously that this is a decent number for Philadelphia to get to, especially at home. But when Coach Zimmer wants to stop the run, he's going to stop the run. So right. I hope that is the case in this game.
Me too.
Let's finish off with our game predictions for this week. The other game is Jacksonville at New England.
Yeah.
They'll play before us, so we will know who we can possibly face in the Super Bowl here in Minneapolis before our game starts. What are you looking at this game? Kind of give us a background and then make your pick.
I would play the Jags plus 9 if I was a gambler, which of course I'm not. So straight up, I would take the Patriots. I just don't see this being a runaway win for the Patriots. I think the Jags defense is good enough to hang with Brady in this offense. And I think the big thing for the Jags offense is either Leonard Fournette's going to be okay enough or Bortles as a runner and scrambler is going to be okay enough to keep the Jags from being buried on the Patriots or on their own end of the field, rather. So I don't think this is 3-and-out punt, Brady touchdown. Jacksonville, 3-and-out punt, Brady touchdown, down 14-0, left-handed game, game's over. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think this is a grinder. I think this is, you know, 26-16. I think this is 28-20. I don't ever think you're going to think the Patriots are going to lose, but you're never going to turn the TV off and assume that they're going to win. Does that make some sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think this is, like I said, 28-19, 28-20, 27-14, something like that.
I just want to say one thing.
Yeah.
I think the team we beat last week was better than both of these teams.
You do?
I really think that the Saints were the most talented team left in the pool of playoff teams. And I think that the Patriots had a cakewalk.
Okay.
I really do.
Yeah.
They had the bye, which they earned in their own right. And then they played the Tennessee Titans at home. And now they played the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. So not saying that Jacksonville is
a pushover.
But the Steelers would have gave them a little more of trouble, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely don't disrespect Jacksonville's defense. They have a spectacular defense. I do disrespect Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
Okay. I do. I don't know why. I don't believe in him on the road. And obviously, it's his third playoff game now. But I hope Jacksonville can put up a fight, but I'm going with the Patriots here.
Well, we may have to issue an apology to Blake Bortles if we're playing the Jags in the Super Bowl. We don't want any bulletin board material coming from here.
No,
so we'll be prepared for that.
Yeah, we'll definitely be prepared. If he goes out and wins this game, I will respect him more than anybody because I do not like the Patriots either.
So. I know you don't. So you and I are both kind of feeling a Patriots and hopefully Vikings Super Bowl. We know someone else who's feeling the same thing, don't we?
That's right. I turned on Good Morning Football this morning and I saw a familiar face in Mike Francesa, the longtime voice of WFAN in New York. He joined the team at Good Morning Football and he made his case that the Vikings will take on the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl at the conclusion of this week. So those are his two picks. And I believe in Mike. I grew up listening to him every day, Mike and the Mad Dog on the radio. It was such a good show to listen to. Some of the best rants you'll hear of all time in sports radio came from these two guys. So I'm with Mike Francesa.
All right. I mean, that's not a bad place to be with Francesa. Pretty awesome personality. So if you didn't catch that video yet on Vikings.com, make sure you go check it out. Mike Francesa, he's one for the ages, man. He's a classic. So, all right. A little bit of fun today on the Wobcast, a little bit of business, and it's all good. We're done for now. The Vikings are going to be in the NFC Championship game. The game is Sunday, 5:40 Central Time kickoff for the Vikings at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia against the Eagles. You can catch the game, of course, on the Vikings radio network, where voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, will have the call, along with Pete Bursich, Greg Coleman, and Ben Lieber. The game will be broadcast on television by Fox with Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews, and Chris Myers. That's it for this edition of the Wobcast. On behalf of co-host and producer Chris Corso, I'm your host, Mike Wobshall, signing off for now. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you next week. Yeah. Yeah!